Pharaoh loves to kiss, Joseph remarked. Yes, too much, she answered. I think you are shrewd enough to see that there is danger for a kingdom which supports within it a too powerful god, and without it many envious tributaries who plot revolts. That was why I was willing you should speak to him of the stout-heartedness of your ancestors, who were not debilitated by all their thoughts on God. I am no man of war, said Joseph, nor was my ancestor, save under great pressure. My father was a pious dweller in tents, and prone to contemplation, and I am his son by his first and true wife. True, among my brethren who sold me are several who are capable of considerable barbarity. The twins were war heroes. We called them twins, although there is a whole year between them. And Gadio, son of one of the concubines, wore more or less harness, at least in my time. T shook her head. You have a way, she said, of talking about your people. As a mother, I should call it spoilt. All in all, you think pretty well of yourself, it seems. You feel you could stand a good deal of promotion? Let me put it like this, great lady, said he, that none surprises me. So much the better for you, she answered. I told you that he would exalt you, probably quite extravagantly. He does not know it yet, but when he comes to himself, he will. Joseph said, Pharaoh has exalted me in that he honored me with this talk about God. Rubbish, she said impatiently. You put him on to it. You led him to it from the start. You need not play the innocent before me, or pretend to be the lamb they called you who spoiled you when they brought you up. I have a political mind. It is no use to make pious faces to me. Sweet sleep, forsooth, and mother's milk, warm baths and swaddling bands, stuff and nonsense. I have nothing against politics, on the contrary, and I do not reproach you for making the best of your hour. Your talk of God was a talk of gods as well. And your story not bad at all, the one about the god of mischief and worldly wise advantage. Pardon, great mother, said Joseph. It was Pharaoh who told that tale. Pharaoh is receptive and suggestible, she responded. What he said, your presence evoked. He felt you and spoke of the god. I was without falseness against him, great queen, said Joseph, and I will remain so, whatever he may decide about me. By Pharaoh's life, I will never betray his kiss. It is long since I received the last kiss. That was at Dothan, in the vale. My brother Jehuda kissed me before the eyes of the children of Ishmael, my purchasers, to show them how highly he valued the goods. That kiss your dear son has wiped off with his own. But my heart is full of the wish to serve and help him as well as I can, and as far as he empowers me to do it. Yes, serve and help him, said she, coming quite close with her firm little person and putting her hand on his shoulder. Do you promise it to his mother? You see the great and high responsibility I have with the child. But you understand. You are painfully subtle. You even spoke of the wrong, right one. And he is so sensitive. He got the point when you suggested that one can be right and yet wrong. It was not known or recognized before, answered Joseph. It is a destiny and a basis for destiny that a man can be right on the way, and yet not the right one for the way. Until today, there was no such thing, but from now on there will be. Honor is due every new foundation. Honor and love, if one is as worthy love as your lovely son. From Pharaoh's direction came a sigh. The mother turned toward him. He stirred, blinked his eyes, and stood up straight. Color came back to his lips and cheeks. Decisions, they heard him say. Decisions must be made. My Majesty made it clear that I had no more time and must return at once to my immediate kingly concerns. Pardon my absence, he said with a smile as he let his mother lead him back to his seat and sank into the cushions. Pardon me, Mama, And you too, dear soothsayer. Pharaoh, he added with a meditative smile, had no need to excuse himself, for he is untrammeled, and besides, he did not go, but was fetched. But he excuses himself all the same out of ordinary politeness. But now to business. We have time, but we have none to lose. Take your seat, Eternal Mother, if I may respectfully beg you. It is not proper for you to stand when your son is sitting. Only this young man with the lower region's name might stand before Pharaoh for a little while longer during the discussion of matters growing out of my dreams. They came from below, too, but out of concern for that which is above. But he seems to me to be blessed from below up and from above down. So you are of the opinion, Osarsif, he asked, that we must husband the fullness against the ensuing scarcity, and collect enormous stores in the barns to be given out in the barren years, in order that the upper should not suffer with the lower? Just so, dear master, answered Joseph. The term was quite foreign to etiquette, and at once brought the bright tears to Pharaoh's eyes. That is the silent message of the dreams. There cannot be enough barns and granaries. There are many in the land, but yet all too few. New ones must be built everywhere, so that their number is like the stars in the skies. And everywhere must officials be appointed to deal with the harvest and collect the taxes. There should be no arbitrary estimate which can always be got round with bribes, but instead there must be a fixed ruling, and heap up grain in Pharaoh's granaries until it is like the sands of the sea, and provision the cities so that food is laid up for distribution in the bad years, and the land does not perish of hunger, and Amun reap the benefit, who would misinterpret Pharaoh to the people, saying, it is the king who is guilty, and this the punishment for the new teaching and worship. I said distribution, but I do not mean it so that the corn should be handed out once and for all, but we should distribute to the poor and the little people, and sell to the great and rich. Poor harvests mean a hard time, and when the Nile is low, prices are high. The rich shall buy dear, and all those shall stoop who still think themselves great as Pharaoh in the land. For only Pharaoh shall be rich in the land of Egypt, and he shall become silver and gold. Who shall sell? Cried Amenhotep in alarm. God's son? The king? But Joseph answered, God forbid. It shall be the wise and understanding man whom Pharaoh must search out among his servants, one filled with the spirit of planning and foresight, master of the survey, who sees all, even unto the borders of the land and beyond, because the borders of the land are not his borders. Him let Pharaoh appoint, and set him over the land of Egypt with the words, Be as myself, so that he husband the abundance as long as it goes on, and feed the dearth when it comes. Let him be as the moon between Pharaoh, our lovely son, and the earth below. He shall build the barns, direct the host of officials, and establish the laws governing the collection. He shall investigate and find out where it is to be distributed greatest and where sold, shall arrange that the little people shall eat and listen to Pharaoh's teaching, and shall harass the great in favor of the crown, that Pharaoh become over and over gold and silver. The goddess mother laughed a little from her chair. You laugh, little mama, said Amenhotep. But my majesty finds really interesting what our foreseer here foresees. Pharaoh looks down from above on these things below, but it interests him mightily to see what the moon brings about on earth in her jesting spectral way. Tell me more, soothsayer, since we are in council, about this middleman, this blithe, ingenious young man, and how he should go to work once I have appointed him. I am not Kemeh's child, and not the son of Gior, answered Joseph. Indeed, I came from abroad. But the garment of my body has long been of Egyptian stuff, for at 17 I came down here with my guide, which God appointed for me, the Midianites, and came to know Amun, your city. Although I am from afar, I know this and that about the affairs of the land and its history, how everything came about, and how the kingdom grew out of the gnomes, and out of the old, the new, and how remnants of the old still defiantly persist, out of tune with the times. For Pharaoh's fathers, the princes of Waset, who smote the foreign kings and drove them out and made the black earth a royal possession, these had to reward the princes of the gnomes and the petty kings who helped them in their campaigns with gifts of land and lofty titles, so that some of them still call themselves kings next after Pharaoh, sit defiantly on their estates, which are not Pharaoh's, and resist the passage of time. All this being well known to me, I have no trouble in showing how Pharaoh's middleman, the master of the survey and of the prices, shall act and how use the occasion. He will fix the prices for the whole 7 years to the proud district princes and surviving so-called kings, when they have neither bread nor seed, but he has abundance of them. They shall be such a kind of prices that their eyes will run over with tears, and they shall be plucked to the last pin feather, so that their land shall finally fall to the crown, as it ought, and these stiff-necked kings be turned into tenants. Good, said the Queen Mother energetically in her deep voice. Pharaoh was much amused. What a rascal, your young middleman and moon magician, he laughed. My Majesty would not have thought of it, but he finds it capital. But what shall this man, my regent, do about the temples, which are rich to excess and oppress the land? Shall he harass them too and fleece them properly as a rogue should? Above all, I would wish that Amun might be plundered, and that my man of business would straightway lay the common taxes on him who has never had to pay. If the man is as extremely sensible as I expect, replied Joseph, he will spare the temples and leave the gods of Egypt alone during the years of plenty, since it has always been the custom for the gods' property to be left untaxed. Above all, Amun must not be exasperated against the work of provision, and not agitate among the people to oppose the storage of supplies, telling them it is directed against the god. When the hard times come, then the temple will have to pay the prices of the master of the prices. That is enough. It will not profit from the success of the crown's enterprise. Pharaoh shall become heavier and more golden than all of them if the middleman even halfway understands his affair. Very sensible, nodded the mother goddess. But if I do not deceive myself in the man, went on Joseph, and why should I, since Pharaoh will choose him, then the man will cast his eye even beyond the borders of the land and see to it that disloyalty is suppressed and the vacillating firmly attached to Pharaoh's throne. When my forefather Abram came down into Egypt with his wife Sarai, which means queen and heroine, when they came down, there was famine at home where they lived, and high prices in the lands of the Retenu, Amor, and Zehai. But in Egypt there was plenty. And shall it be different now? When the time of the lean kine comes for us here, who says there will not be scarcity up there too? Pharaoh's dreams were so heavy with warning that their meaning might apply to the whole world, and would be a thing something like the flood. Then the peoples would come on pilgrimage down to the land of Egypt to get bread and seed corn, for Pharaoh has it heaped up in abundance. People will come hither, people from everywhere and from who knows where, whom one had never expected to see here. They will come, driven by need, and come before the Lord of the Survey, your businessman, and say to him, sell to us, otherwise we are sold and betrayed, for we and our children are dying of hunger, and know not how to live longer unless you sell to us out of your substance. Then will the seller answer them, and go about with them according to what sort of people they are. But how he will go about with this and that city king of Syria and Phoenicia, that I can trust myself to prophesy. For I know that neither of them loves Pharaoh his lord as he should, and is unsteady in his loyalty, carrying water on both shoulders, and even pretending submission to Pharaoh, but at the same time making eyes at the Hittites, and bargaining for his own advantage. Such as these will the overseer make humble when the time comes, I can see that. For not alone silver and wood will he make them pay for bread and seed corn. They will be obliged to deliver up their sons and daughters as payment, or as a guarantee to Egypt if they want to live. Thus they will be bound to Pharaoh's seat, so that one can depend on their loyalty and duty." Amenhotep bounced for joy on his chair like a child. "Little mama," he cried, "think of Milkili, the king of Ashdod, who is more than wobbling and so evil-intentioned that he loves not Pharaoh from his whole heart, but even plots treachery and defection. I have had letters to that effect. Everybody wants me to send troops against Milkili and die my sword. Horemheb, my first officer, demands it twice daily. But I will not do it, for the lord of the Aton will have no bloodshed. But now you hear how my friend here, the son of the roguish one, suggests how we can force the loyalty of such bad kings and bind them firmly to Pharaoh's seat without shedding of blood, and just in the way of business. Capital! Capital!" he cried, and struck his hand repeatedly on the arm of his chair. Suddenly he grew serious and got up solemnly from his seat, but then, as though seized by misgiving, sat down again. "It is difficult," he said pettishly. "Mama, I do not know how to arrange about the office and rank which I shall confer on my friend and middleman, the person who shall concern himself with the collection and distribution of provisions. The government is unfortunately fully staffed. All the best offices are taken. We have the two viziers, the overseers of the granaries and the king's herds, the chief scribe of the treasury, and so on. Where is the office for my friend, to which I can appoint him with a suitable title?" "That is the least of your difficulties," returned his mother calmly. She even turned her head aside as though the matter were indifferent to her. "It happened often in earlier times, and even in more recent ones. There is an established tradition which could be resumed any day, if it pleased your majesty, to set between Pharaoh and the great officials of the state a go-between and mouthpiece, the head of all the heads, and overseer of all the overseers, through whom the king's word went forth, the representative of the god. The chief mouthpiece is something quite customary. We need not see difficulties where there are none," she said, and turned her head even further away. "And that is the truth," Amenhotep cried. "I knew it. I had just forgotten it, because there had been no occupant of the office for so long, no moon between the heaven and the earth, and the viziers of the north and the south were the highest. Thank you, little mama. Thank you most warmly and cordially." And he got up again, very grave and solemn of countenance. "Come nearer to the king," he said. "Usarsif, messenger and friend, come here beside me, and let me tell you. The good Pharaoh fears to startle you. I beg you to steel yourself for what Pharaoh has to say. Steel yourself beforehand, even before you have heard my words, so that you will not fall in a faint and feel as though a winged bull were bearing you up to the skies. Have you prepared yourself? Then hear. You are this man. You yourself and no other are he whom I choose and raise to a place here by my side to be chief overseer over all, into whose hands the highest power is given, that you may husband the plenty and feed the lands in the years of famine. Can you wonder at this? Can my decision take you utterly by surprise? You have interpreted me my dreams from below without cauldron or book, just as I felt one must interpret them, and you did not fall dead afterwards, as inspired lambs are wont to do. To me, that was a sign that you are set apart to take all the measures which, as you clearly recognize, follow from the interpretation. You have interpreted to me my dreams from above, precisely according to the truth of which my heart was aware, and have explained to me why my father said that he did not wish to be called Aton, but the lord of the Aton, and you have enlightened my soul on the doctrinal difference between my father above and my father who is in heaven. You are not only a prophet, but a rogue as well. You have shown me how, by means of the lean years, we can fleece the district kings who no longer fit into the picture, and bind the wavering city kings of Syria to Pharaoh's seat. God has told you all this, and because of it, no one can be so understanding as you, and there can be no sense in my seeking far and near for another. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be obedient to your word. Are you very much surprised?